Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Life Walk with Christ God. I am Michael, and welcome to Trim Radio, the creator studio here. And tell you what, I'm so excited because I haven't been on in a while. We've had a lot of family issues going on, different things, but we have a lot of great shows coming up. Dora Sherry's going to be on here. That's going to be great. We've got Peter Kling. We've got Maggie Kling. We've got Riskella Stevens, Stu Shear. I mean, we have Ranch It Up. We have a whole bunch of shows. Love for you guys to join on to us. Listen, we don't charge anything. We want you to be able to air and talk about what you want and enjoy your time. And that's what we want. And we just take joy in that. Anyway, before we begin, I wanted to let you know I'm not a pastor, deacon, bishop, priest, clergy. I'm just a person that loves to read the Bible. It's open to a lot of interpretation. If you ever have any questions, go back to your pastor, go back to your priest, go back to those people and ask those questions. How I interpret it might be totally different from what you do. The fact of the matter is, it's the best thing if you're reading it. I've always said the Bible is the greatest true love story ever written that's factual. Over three continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa, 40 different authors. I mean, there's 64,779 cross-references from Old Testament to New Testament. It's not one book, it's 66 books. It's absolutely incredible, and it'll change your life. I've had so many different experiences that have happened to me since I have just delved into this, and I just love it. So it's wonderful. It's backed up by artifacts. It's backed up by fossils. It's backed up by times, dates, witnesses, everything. So, and it goes back way more than 2,000 years. You know, we say 1,500 when it was canonized, but the scrolls, the parchments, and the different things that were written for it, all the way back to Genesis. You know, so it's really, really cool. And I just love it. So, but anyway, tonight, one of the things I ran across this week was somebody telling me that this was more dogmatic of a relationship, a religious type relationship. And I said, absolutely not. How so? And the question they asked me was, well, how would Adam and the woman know that they did wrong? And my answer was simple. God gave them a command. Adam wasn't from the garden. God created Adam from the dust and breathed in to his nostrils, gave life, and put him in the garden to take care of the garden. So, and of course, afterward, woman was born and made from Adam's rib. And this is the one time you're going to see this in history, because everything else that comes from life is from woman. And I mean, regarding people. So there's no other way to do it. So I kind of laugh at, you know, and I shouldn't laugh, but I kind of enjoy the fact that when I see the people today and they don't know and they think men can get pregnant, that is not how it works, not how it works at all. But the bottom line was, my answer to him was, God gave a command. And they said, but they still wouldn't know what's right or wrong. I said, the fact that he said, don't do this, was the command. He's telling them what is right, what is wrong. If you eat from the tree, it's wrong. If you don't, then that's right. So they did what they did, and that's exactly how we have it. This has gone through. People know right from wrong. It's like atheists that go on out of their way to prove that God doesn't exist. But the bottom line is, theirs is a religion. They might say, I don't have a religion, I'm an atheist. Yes, you do. Because if you go out of your way to try to prove that Christ and God don't exist, and there are others like you doing this, then you fall exactly into that category, which means deep down inside, you actually believe. Because why would you waste your time in trying to prove that God or Christ doesn't exist, what would be the point? Where's the value? So when we look at this and when I hear them talk, it's heartbreaking in a lot of reasons. The relationship that we have with God, remember, our relationship there is always going to be strained. Why? Because of sin. And that's because of us. So Christ came because we could not fulfill the first covenant. We blew it. So he has to send his son. And he's clear about this in Isaiah. So in Isaiah, if you go on back 7 and you go back to 43 and you take a look at these different chapters in there, you will see, I'm tired of the burnt offerings. I'm tired of your incense. I'm tired of your lip service because it wasn't sincere. It became more of a habit than it did actually wanting to please God. So God is clear about this. He says, listen, I've got one that's going to be calling from the wilderness. It's going to make the path straight, flat. Here we go, even. And he's going to prepare the way from the one that I have chosen. Did they not hear? Did they not understand? Did they not perceive? Who's going to go? And Christ, of course, his chosen one. Here I am. I'm going to go. Here I am. He comes. They crucify him. 3 days later, he rises from the dead. And actually, he descends first and then ascends. And he had to go show death that he beat death. And when you look at this, if you want to say, okay, it's an analogy, it's a metaphor, bottom line is he had to go show Satan, evil, darkness, I beat death. And death is the thing that we're all should be focused on. Are you alive? You know, the Bible says, are you alive when we go and we are walking in Christ, or are you dark? Your eyes are the light of your body. If they're healthy, how wonderful. If they're not healthy, how horrible. You know, how great is that darkness? And again, that's another metaphor, another analogy right there. Saying, you know, if you're going to live in sin and be attracted to these worldly things and everything else, yeah, we're doomed. But when he came, when he did that for us because of our shortcomings, understand that was the second covenant. And he's clear about it in Matthew. I came to fulfill the first covenant. I didn't come to abolish it. I came to fulfill it. It's completed now. No more burnt offerings, no more incense, no more any of that. I am the ultimate sacrifice. And it had to be. And why did he come in the flesh? Because we don't believe a thing unless we see it. We don't, it's too hard of a concept for us. I mean, here he was in front of the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin, and they still didn't believe him. And yet he even tells them. He said, you've read about this. Moses knew this, said this. And they still didn't believe him. They missed the boat right in front of them because they truly didn't have faith. They didn't have hope. They didn't think it was fulfilled. They didn't see him. They didn't perceive. Going back to Isaiah again, did they not understand? Did they not see? Did they not hear? I mean, this jumps back there. You go on back, Dan, you go everywhere you want throughout the Bible, and it is setting up the framework for Christ in the future, including Moses, all the way back, even before. God's plan was mapped out from the very, very beginning. And how do we know this? Because God knitted us together in the womb before the world and creation was made. This all had to happen just as it was written. The prophecies, the prophets, everything has to be fulfilled. And it will. And there's no stopping that. But I wanted to get in because it hurts me to see how many people today want to go against God for whatever reason that they do. One person told me, my invisible friend. Well, God is my friend, but he's also my father. And I explained to him, you know, really, if you think about this, and I broke this down in the most basic way, if I'm wrong, and I've been preaching and praying and spreading the word, the only thing I've lost is time. If I'm wrong, which I know I'm not, I'm positive I'm not, but whatever, you know, be so as it may, how they think. And I said, but if you're wrong, you have lost far greater. And there's no turning back from it. And I guess people today, they want to go around, they want to preach, they're worried about, they want that word, I'm a Christian, I'm this and that. I have a very spiritual relationship with God, Christ God. I know I'm flawed. I know I have made mistakes in my life that are not only embarrassing, they're stupid, they're just horrible, horrible mistakes. And I completely understand why I'm going to be held accountable for them. And that is one of the reasons why you have to clean up your act. A wild mouth or lustful things or coveting or just everything you can imagine. I mean, there's looking through it, there's really not one that we haven't all broken. And we could say that, you know what? No, I'm a good person. I do this, I do that. You're breaking one right there because you're thinking more of yourself than what you ought to. Paul's very clear about that in Hebrews, and we have to be careful about this. But today I wanted to get into Matthew. Matthew's a great book. So we're going to read a little bit about this because I enjoy this book. And let's hear what Christ says about all this.
Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite.
When he says brother, he understands something. Everyone in this world, brothers and sisters, and those that are following Christ, especially having a spiritual relationship with God, when we sit there and we start to criticize and we don't think about ourselves, it's kind of a narcissistic relationship where we say, look at what you're doing here. This is wrong and everything like that. And that's why we're having the problems today. No, it's really kind of a narcissistic relationship there. And we're not looking at our own faults. We're not looking at the things that we do wrong. We're looking at the things and wanting to point out the things that other people did wrong. And we've all done it. We catch ourselves doing it. And when God says, hey, listen, how you're going to be judged, it's going to be according to exactly how you judge others. So the guy who cuts you off, you know, or the bad things that happen and you get upset, understand something. You're making judgment on something. I'm angry at this person. Well, you don't think God is going to give you that same anger back? Well, look at how you treated them. And we need to think of that so that no matter what, we're kind of, and it's hard to do, especially in today's world with everything going on. Joyful and happy. And it's very interesting that we don't think about that And I think we spend most of the time after we say something, 5 seconds later, going, trying to suck the words back into ourselves because we know, oh, man, I messed up. But let's go ahead.
First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces.
So here's another parable that he is saying. And what he's saying, do not give dogs what is sacred and do not throw your pearls to pigs. God's word, wasting it on somebody who is just dead set on not listening to it. And we've heard this with the parable, the sower of the seeds. But God's word is sacred. It's holy. Understand, it's a living word that Christ God, you know, these things that he is telling us to follow, his commands, his decrees, his statutes, okay? And when he says, do not give dogs what is sacred, do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you're going to sit there and waste time on somebody who's going to argue with you and not accept or not even consider God's words, you're wasting your time when you could be out there helping others. It's a waste of time. So be gentle with them. Walk away. Don't lose that time to somebody that is absolutely not going to give it a second thought. It's a waste of time, and it's a wasting of God's wonderful, wonderful words and, you know, all the things that he expects from us. So don't waste your time doing that. So let's move on.
Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened.
This is, we're supposed to have this relationship with God, not on our terms, but on his terms. And it is our job, it is incumbent upon us to learn as much as we can about Christ and about God. And God said, listen, I'm always going to be with you. There's not going to be a time where I'm going to forsake you or abandon you. But you have to nourish this relationship too. It is our responsibility. It's incumbent upon us. When we want knowledge, ask God for knowledge. If we're worried about something, ask God to take that worry. Hand it over to him. When we want discernment, ask him. We have to seek these things out. Seeking it out means learning it, going and finding out, doing something on your own. You're putting in the work. You're putting in the work to have a relationship. God is already there. Listen, his hand is already out. He's ready to shake your hand. When we sin, when we make a mistake, our hand pulls back. His hand is never moved. We have to come back, and we have to have a feeling that we're not worthless. Understand something. We have to be confident when we come to God, okay? But we have to have the knowledge. He has to know that we've put in the work. How do we expect to get to heaven, the most holy of holy places, if we didn't put in the work? We could say, I believe in God. I'm, you know, not a doubt in my mind. Christ is here, but as we're about to find out, how does he feel about that? So let's move on.
Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. This sums up the law and the prophets.
And he's pretty clear there. And he's telling you, hey, listen, you know what? We have to step back. And this world needs to step back. Every single person needs to step back and say, you know what? What are we doing? How are we representing Christ God when we behave the way that we behave? Are we bringing any value at all to God? Or are we doing the same thing that the Israelites and everybody else did in the first covenant? Lip service, insincere. I prayed every night, God, but I did it because more a habit than it was with sincerity. God doesn't want that. You know, he truly loves you and has never left you and gotten you through every trouble. Will he solve your problems? No, but he'll give you the ability. He'll give you the way to do it. That's part of the seeking and finding out, laying things at his feet, saying, I'm worried about this. I don't know what to do. He is not going to give you too much that you can't handle it. He'll give you the ability to figure it out. But you have to trust in him, and you have to have faith in him. You have to have a relationship with him. I don't care if it's a medical problem. I don't care if it's a financial problem. I don't care if it's a physical problem. I don't, you know, if it's something else, it doesn't matter. But we do have to seek God out. And in every step that we make, we must ask God, is this okay? And we don't always do it. And he says, don't worry about it. Listen, you're coming to me. You're seeking me. I'm not going to forsake you. So let's go on down.
Enter through the narrow gate. For wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only
a few find it. Now, this part in Matthew right here, which I really love, Matthew 13, and it goes all the way through 14. Is a direct parallelism. If you go back to early Genesis, Jacob's dream, Isaac's son, Jacob. And Jacob had this dream. He lays his head on a rock as a pillow. And it's important to remember this. He puts his head on a rock as a pillow. And when you start to peel back the Bible, you're going to start to see these really little things that you never really thought of. Okay, so we slept. Didn't most of them sleep on rocks? They pointed it out. It was a direct correlation. And he's having this dream, seeing angels on this narrow, you know, steps, ladder, whatever, coming up and down, ascending and descending in the earth. Narrow. And narrow is the gate. And narrow is the road. You know, that is going to get you in, that is going to lead you to life. But wide is the gate and wide is the road that will lead you to destruction. You could think you're on the road and you're not on the road, but you could see the direct parallelism here. And if you look at it in a theological way, the rock, the cornerstone of Christ, and of course that road, that gate, that road, the same thing. It's fantastic. But everything that is being done is an invitation. It's God saying, listen, follow me. Don't turn to the left. Don't turn to the right. Just follow me and come right down this small path. Doesn't have to be a big path, just a small path, and come to me. You know, Be my sheep. No one is going to take you from my hands. No one's going to snatch you from my Father's hands. And my Father will be your God. He will take care of you. He will protect you and watch over you. There are so many good things. But wide is the gate to the people that just don't want to, they're not sincere. They might say, maybe they go to church every Sunday. Maybe I read the Bible once a week, or Maybe I'll go to a Bible study. But the problem is they don't really don't know it all. And sometimes they can't back it up. And we sit there and we think about it. But my question is, could you defend your belief and your faith with God? And how would you do that? How in the world would you do that? And I've come to that point in my life, you know, it scares me to death. You know, am I doing the absolute right thing? It becomes, and then I go back a lot of times. You're mourning. Mourning is a way of being remorseful. And then confession. But we're mourning the things that we do wrong. It's a good start. Because if you're thinking about these things that you did wrong, that's a good start. That means you know that you're flawed and you need Christ, God, because they're the only ones that can help you. They're the only ones that can blot it out. I have experienced things in this world, numerous, numerous things that absolutely, without a doubt, lets me know that He has been with me. He has walked with me. I love to talk about scripture. I love to talk about the different books, and I get more and more excited. I've sat with people for hours and talked to them and had discussions, and it's just something that I enjoy. It's something that I love, and it's something that I want to share. Am I good at following all the teachings and everything? Absolutely not. I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible at it. Every day we sin, and every day we fall short, and the next day is a new day. And then it's even more disappointing because some of them are the same ones, and you got to clean up your act. And I get it. It's hard. And then once you do start to follow Him, you're really in for it. It's rough. So, but let's keep going about true and false prophets. So,
you find it. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them.
And those are people that want to talk a good game, or that, you know, that they want to do this. But then you look at their actions, you look at their deeds, you look at how they treat their fellow man. You watch the ways of how they respond to different things. Are they the ones that are constantly doing things that they don't care? But yet, they'll talk about God, and how they treat other people, you know, is going to tell you exactly what you're dealing with. And these people, we've got a whole bunch of them out there in the world now. Hey, on this date and this date, this is going to happen. It doesn't happen. Then all these people that are on the reels or whatever, did you know that this book of Enoch or this book here, you know, that God is the bad guy actually or something else? That's their fruit. There's nothing that is helping the rest of mankind. It's only taking away, pulling away. The Bible is very specific. It's written for God to have a relationship with God, to know what He expects from us, how we should live our lives, and Jesus Christ. And we had Jesus Christ who died, rose again 3 days later, and we have to believe that and know that. But, you know, if you go through and you look back in the Bible and you see, okay, well, a donkey talked here to Balaam, and he was on the road. Okay, so this happened. Jericho happened. The Red Sea happened. I mean, the Jordan happened. If we go back and we look at all the miracles in Ezekiel, how many do you see this valley. Yes. Where's Philip? Bones. Do you think these bones could come back? Only you know, God. Only you know. And then he's watching them all come back together. All these things, happened exactly as he said, without a doubt. I mean, if you look at the eyewitnesses, if you look at the 12 tribes, and people are like, well, what do you mean 12 tribes? Look at Jacob's sons. From Leah, from Rachel, you take a look. And yeah, that's where these 12 tribes are from. And of course, Jacob is the son of Isaac and Esau. And, you know, Rebecca was the mom at that time, you know, and if you go back, Isaac was the child of Abram, who was Abraham, and Sarah, who was Sarai. So there's this thing too, you know, did this relationship before Abraham was circumcised, was this relationship there? And is it a way of, you know, him having faith? Well, no. Before that happened, God and Abraham were talking. So Abraham believing, having faith of something he couldn't see, but knew and was talking to and was about, and doing exactly as he said, being obedient instead of obstinate like the Israelite people were, understand something. Then he was circumcised. It was the covenant. It was to show that there is a bond. And God made a covenant with Abraham. He made a covenant with Isaac. He made a covenant with Jacob. And they multiplied as numerous as the stars in the sand on the seashore. So a lot of people don't catch a lot of the different things, but that's how all this started. So let's move on even more now.
Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles. Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.
So, this is exactly what I'm talking about today. That's great. You can go around, you can do this, you can do it. And you'll notice it comes right after the false prophets and everything, and how will you know them by their fruit, by how they are. But these people here will go ahead and they'll say this, you know, but are they doing it all the time? Are they doing it on their terms or on God's terms, on Christ's terms or their terms? And that's the difference. And it's hard to walk the way that Christ did. It is not easy. In every inclination, if you go back, Genesis 8, I believe it is, you go back and God said every inclination and thought from humans is evil. And we're doomed right off the bat. So, and was sin born in the Garden of Eden? No. No, because Satan says later on in Matthew here, I watched Satan fall like lightning. He fell like lightning. Why? Because there was war in heaven. And how Satan got to his pride got in the way, his arrogance got in the way, but he thought that he could be as good or better than God, and they're not even on the same plane. God created Lucifer, Satan, not the other way around. So they were never equal. And of course, due to their rebellion, out you went. And they were booted off and fell down to the earth. And those watchers, they were still evil. And they were frolicking around with the human women and everything else. So the Nephilim became a thing. God was tired of this. Understand, he will avenge. We have a jealous God. He's very clear about that. We have a God who he can get angry. We've seen it. A lot of people are like, well, God is ruthless. Well, no, God is just. A big difference there from ruthless to just. Dealing with human beings, God was just in every single way because we are just, we're not good. I mean, we're not good. So, and we've proven it over and over and over again. And very few of us, but when you look at Moses, when you look at David, when you look at Elisha, you look at Ezekiel, you look at Jeremiah, you look at, you know, anywhere you want. So, I mean, it's Daniel. I don't care. You look at every single book, you look at it, and you will see very few people, very few leaders. But the bottom line is God will do what God, as he says, I will have compassion on who I will have compassion. I will have mercy on who I want to have mercy. But we're the ones who create it. So here we go. The wise and the foolish.
Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. And it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, and not as their teachers of the law.
And that was part of the Sanhedrin, the Pharisees, and the Sadducees. That was their problem. They wanted to judge people clearly on the books of going back Moses and all through with the prophets. But the problem was they were doing things that they should have been judged about, that they weren't holding to their own standards of what was written in the law, and then putting other people, putting a heavy burden upon them. But yet themselves, they were sitting at banquet. You know, they were sitting at banquet and sitting here, and they were hypocrites. And then when God's right in front of them, they couldn't see it. They were afraid, hey, we're going to lose our look at our stature here. We're going to lose all credibility and everything else. They didn't want to share the spotlight with Christ. They didn't want to share that knowledge that, hey, here is God here. They were afraid that anything that they had was going to be taken away from them. So they missed the boat, and they didn't believe what was right in front of them, which is still amazing. And today, if we had that same thing, would it happen again? Absolutely. Absolutely. We have people that don't value life. We have people that just don't value boundaries whatsoever. Have compassion, have mercy, have grace, anything else. They hurt people. They steal from people. They poison people. They maim. They murder. It's insane. The insanity, at some point, we have to have that moral compass. Understand something. God doesn't need us. We need him. That's the biggest thing. We need him. But the only way is if we seek him, and then we will find him. And then we have to ask, God, I need you, God. Please help me with this. I can't do this by myself. I find myself doing that a lot. Because when I screw something up, I seem to take it to the most extreme. And then I need help correcting it because I didn't just forget to tie a shoelace. No, I ripped the whole things apart somehow. So, but I want you to think about that this week as, my first time back, I've seen something that was pretty incredible this week. I'm very thankful to God. And our testimony, the things that we've experienced in life, understand something, that testimony goes a long way. I take care of my mother. She's 91. I have two brothers, loving brothers. They're fantastic. We grew up, we're a close family. Flaws and whatever, you know, we're close no matter what. Mom had taken ill with an infection, and it got to the point it was really bad. And I think about this, and I go through my mind, and it just is incredible. Right during down here in South Carolina, the snowstorm's coming. We're a day away, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, this is not going to be good, you know. So it was Thursday last week, and she had 103 plus, almost 104 temperature. She had not been responsive for 2 days, very little, until my brothers came in, very little. But she had not been responsive for two full days, not eaten, over 24 hours. You know, as a matter of fact, it was like 36. Barely breathing, raspiness in her throat. A lot of people call it like the death creep or whatever. The nurse, everyone, we all gave her hours. And I had called my brothers and said, you better get here and get here fast. And they traveled a long distance. She pulled through. She beat the fever. You know, just rose up, started eating again, started talking, started joking around. Doesn't remember much about it, but pretty much back to her old self. And usually during these times, patients will maybe have a little perky moment, like get me a sandwich or something. No, she's been pretty stable about it. So it gives me a lot of hope. But for the impossible like that to happen, this is where hope and faith and prayer. So many people were praying for, told me they were praying for. And if you don't think prayer is powerful, I'm going to tell you, I've seen prayer in action. I've seen hope and faith just work things. It's incredible. And God he's blessed us so much. And I've had my times where I've been lackadaisical or insincere, and I felt like I'm stagnant. I had another one where the neighbor next door wasn't so much a big believer. Maybe she had a rough life, so maybe a little disappointed in God. But, you know, it told me before, you know, she wasn't big on it or anything. When I got that way, it was during a storm, and I had discussed this with Sherry, and we had discussed it, and I said, you know what, I feel ashamed, and I feel bad, because I don't feel I'm giving him honestly what he deserves. And we had our grandson in with us, and we were watching TV up in the bedroom, and a bolt of lightning hit a tree, except it didn't hit one tree, it hit three at one time. And this was like, you know, a couple, 100-foot tree, and another 100-foot tree, and another one. And one, it completely just blew apart the bark, which shrapneled the neighbor next door. It was across the street. It was down the street. It popped up the cable thing, you know, in the front yard. And the water pipes that I have, the drainage pipes, it blew them right out of the ground. I mean, it was intense. It just scared us to death. Couldn't see, couldn't hear for like 30 seconds. And we didn't feel the lightning go through us, but we felt the energy, like it just kind of traveled through us. Not like being struck like lightning, you know, but the energy that went through us. And you know, then we went out and looked at the trees and the other tree, and our house never got touched, really. I think we lost a sound box. That was it. But, you know, and of course the drainage pipes and, you know, the trees. But, and hers was actually, God has a funny way of working things out. Woke me up, made me appreciate, okay, I am still here. I'm with you. I'm going to show you power. I'm going to show you what it's like you should fear. And I did. And I'm going to tell you, it was a wake-up call. And it was to get me back on track, which worked out pretty good. But it's not just those things. It's so many others. Story after story I could tell you, where I'm seeing these things. I'm perceiving these things. I'm hearing these things. He's showing these things. And when I pray, I ask him, you know, give me more knowledge. I want more knowledge, more. Give me more discernment. Make me understand more. Get to know you better. And that's what we should be doing. And studying his word. Okay, it's not about just knowing the Bible, but it's about knowing the relationship that you're having with God in the Bible. And when you go through the books, you have to peel back so many different layers because there's so many different things going on. And then you're going to have to, you kind of will put them in focus as you've read through the whole Bible. Wow, this is like the same thing over here, Matthew to Genesis. Okay. And then, oh, wow. Then we'll go on back here to Isaiah. Wow, this goes back to another book. I mean, all these different books at all these different times that are in the Bible that make up the Bible. And then you're like, okay, I see this. And the more you do it, the more you're going to see. And every time I go through it, I see something else. I mean, there's just so much you can miss. So you go back and you read it again and again and again and again. And like Joshua, it was an incredible book. They're all incredible, but the things that I missed, and I'm like, oh man, how did I miss that? It's falling in love with the word. You have to fall in love with it. And you have to understand that it's a love story, but it's a true factual love story. And it's the best one ever written. And it's not written by one guy. Okay. It's written by 40 over three continents, three different languages, you know, Hebrew, Greek, Aramaic. I mean, it's, if you look at all the different things, it's impossible for somebody to write this. This is a combination of writings from all over. And they're backed up. They say, okay, this place is here. Guess what? It's there. They're finding this stuff out now. It's there. Okay, this was here. It's there. And guess what? It was at these times and these people, these people witnessed it. 500 people here, maybe 1,000 here, 5,000 there. All witnesses. And God was clear about that too in Isaiah too. You are my witnesses. I will show you, but you are my witnesses. God didn't even need a witness. He could do whatever he wanted. But that's the beauty of free will. We have a choice. We get to choose him or we get to reject him. But it's those words. It'd be like your father saying, hey, I don't care about you. I don't love you. And I don't know you. It'd be, and it happens in the world. And you can't imagine the devastation, the hurt, and everything that happens from those words. Imagine it's from our Creator. So take the time. Get to know God. Listen. Baby steps it if you have to. You know? Take your time. Baby step it. But you know what? Get to know Him. Life's short. I mean, and everything bad that's happening in the world today goes right back to Ecclesiastes. There's nothing new under the sun. And as far as we know, that was Solomon who wrote it. And, you know, David's son. And I'm just going to tell you, that's, you know, as far as wise, Solomon was wise. So, because that's all he asked for. With that, you guys have a great week. Be good to each other. Love one another. And I will see you guys next week. Take care. God bless.